Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to you. Welcome in. It is Sports Daily, and we are coming to you live right now on KFH. We're glad to have you here live on the 12 News Connected app. Live right now on the Odyssey app, but maybe not when you're listening to us on the Odyssey app. We were live for those of you who podcast us out. We appreciate that. If you ever miss anything on the show, you can just go to the Odyssey app and get it in podcast form. The IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240. It's, of course, brought to you by IHOP, where you can celebrate the weekdays with the new IHOP House faves, all your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. We've got Wyatt Thompson joining the program in just a little bit. Excited about that. He is the voice of the Wildcats, of course, and he will help us go through a massive win out in the mountains. By the way, I'm Jacob Albrecht alongside Tommy Kester, and we have Max Power in with us this week for JAD. Glad to have Max in as well. Glad to have all you with us, the ways you take in the show. You can leave us comments on our video stream as well, Facebook, YouTube, X. It's all there for you. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Happy Monday. Good to see you. A busy weekend, a lot going on, a lot of football to consume. It was nice because, you know, as much as I don't like bye weeks, you had the Chiefs bye week line up with KU's bye week, and so you could really focus in on K-State, focus in on the rest of college football. It was a great college football weekend. NFL was wild, as always. So, of course, we're reacting to all of it today on Sports Daily.
We're going to get into the Cats in our next segment with Wyatt Thompson. So let's start with a brief overview of the NFL weekend. It was Chiefs-less, but I almost took it as a chance. Like, if you're the Chiefs, you sort of sit back and size everybody up, right? Things certainly have not gone perfectly for the Chiefs, you know, like on the roster and those things, but they're, you know, they're one of the perfect teams. Both of them, in fact, were off this week, the Vikings and the Chiefs. So you have those two teams, which are clearly 1 and 2 in the power rankings, all those things, have this opportunity to just sort of look around the league. And that's kind of what I felt like I was doing yesterday, all the way into Sunday Night Football with the Bengals, who, you know, coming into the year, certainly we felt like was this team. I got to tell you, and I know they found a way to win that game. Our offensive line sucks. And I don't know how much of their, this first time I had a chance to like really just like sit and watch them through, other than the time they played the Chiefs. They can't protect better than that. They're not doing anything. Like, their defense showed up a little bit. Great, great. You know, pat on the back. You played the Giants. You know, like, I don't really care about that. So I did that with a lot of teams this weekend, though. Like, are the Bengals for real? I'll say not right now. Can they be? Yeah, probably by the end of the year. But they got a lot of work to do. We'll see a couple of teams in that same light tonight with the Bills and the Jets. We'll talk about that game. But I thought there were a lot of teams, maybe, Tommy, that we weren't necessarily thinking about to start the year, or at least convinced with, that made really impressive statements. I thought the Bears did that, started it off that way. I thought the Chargers did that. Two teams that maybe people were on the fence about. The Buccaneers and the Falcons, I think, both did that as well yesterday. So I thought there were a lot of statements made yesterday. Then there were big statements made by the teams we expected to be really good. The Ravens, the Lions, of course, making huge statements. The Texans looked really nice. So it was at the Packers probably fit into that category. It was a good, I thought, sizing up weekend across the NFL.
Yeah, I really think it was. And, you know, primetime last night, you really, I'm sure that Bengals fans really wanted to see Cincinnati flex a little bit on primetime and show like, hey, we're back. We're one of the top teams. It's been not a great season for us so far. We've had our fair share of issues, especially defensively, but we're going to step up. We're going to show you that we are still a contender in the AFC. And yeah, they get a win, but the Giants aren't any good, and they didn't blow away the Giants.
So without Malik Nabers,
exactly,
without their starting running back.
And so I do think that does tell you something. I think it tells you that their record for the Bengals, their record is who they are. They're not a great team. They're an okay team. They've got weapons. They've got firepower. But they're not a team that, you know, has been really able to string it all together. I think it tells you a lot about Cincinnati long term. If they had gone out there and blown out The Giants, you know, I think it'd be a little bit of a different situation, but they really struggled to move the football. You know, it took Joe Burrow getting into the end zone on his own, you know, really to be able to have them win that game. So I'm not impressed coming away from the primetime game last night about Cincinnati. You know, the teams that you mentioned as far as the ones that made those statements, out of all of them, I think I'm most impressed with the Buccaneers. I think that with what they've been able to do offensively, you know, it tells me that they are for real. And I think they should be considered a legitimate contender in the NFC. I think they're going to come out of that division. And I know that the Falcons probably have something to say about that. New Orleans probably does too, to an extent. But it's really Tampa Bay's division. And I think they're a legitimate contender in that conference.
Yeah, look, the Buccaneers this year, by the way, and I agree with you, I think their defense is flawed, clearly. And, you know, yesterday you give up 27 points to the Saints without Derek Carr. I don't know how good Spencer Rattler is going to be. I guess time will tell. But their wins, Tommy, are against the Commanders, the Lions, the Eagles, and then now you throw in New Orleans. I mean, they have a really weird loss to Denver, but they've beaten good teams this year. So, like, that's, I think you have to take something from that. And that's, you know, they didn't have Rashad White in that game and they still scored 51. They were able to run the ball without, you know.
Chris Godwin looked outstanding catching the ball from Baker Mayfield.
Like, if they can play some defense, you kind of like everything that they've got going. Whereas the Bengals, who took the Chiefs to the wire and easily could have beat them, the Bengals seem like a dangerous team if they can get there, but getting there is going to be a real challenge. Whereas the Buccaneers look like a safe team to get there, and it's just how much better can they make their defense by the time they get there. I thought we saw the Chargers make a big statement yesterday. I actually kind of believe in this, and I didn't see what the final diagnosis on Harbaugh was, but the Chargers feel like a team that's going to probably be competitive in every game they play and will just hang around because of the style of football they play. They're certainly better and ahead of schedule. The Texans finally flexed even without Nico Collins. I'll tell you who probably we need to pay attention to the most, in my opinion, versus what like the range of outcomes is, it's the Bears. And we knew their defense would be really good. It was supposed to be. We didn't know what a rookie quarterback was going to be able to do. And at times it has been slow going. That was the best we've seen of Caleb Williams. And look, I agree with the people, and some people may think this is sacrilegious and would overreact to it. He does stylistically remind me a little bit of Patrick Mahomes when he plays football. He's not as good as Patrick Mahomes. Don't misunderstand, but like his style, like if you're trying to say like, who's that guy look like? That's kind of who he's always reminded me of a little bit. He looked really good. And if he is good, remember what they did around him. Like, if he's good, that's a really good roster on that team.
I like the Bears a lot, and it's really not even that much about Caleb Williams. It is to an extent. I mean, obviously, he's the guy. Like, he's their franchise guy, but it's more about the supporting pieces around him. You know, I've been critical over the last, I don't know, 9 months or so about the Bears' decision to move on from Justin Fields and bring in Caleb Williams because I felt like the Bears built an offense specifically for Justin Fields around him, and then they punted on that and drafted Caleb Williams. But the more that I watch the Bears, the more I realize that the offense that they may have built for Justin Fields can work with almost anybody. And so it's working with Caleb Williams. I'm impressed with Williams. I think he has come along quicker and further than I thought that he probably would. You know, am I a long-term believer in Caleb Williams? I'm not quite there yet. I think, really? At least for me, I think he'll be a really good quarterback. I think that he clearly yesterday played out of his mind in London. The Jaguars are not good at all. Doug Peterson will probably be the first coach to get let go in this cycle, or the second one, I guess, after Robert Saleh.
McCarthy should have.
McCarthy's right there too, but I think Peterson's probably on his way out. So I think that is just as much of how bad the Jags are.
Yeah,
you know, compared with how good the Bears are, I think you have to take both into consideration there.
I do. I was Team Williams though, and you know that. Like, I've been in on Williams. I thought he should have been the first pick. I really liked him, and that's not a knock to the other quarterbacks because I liked almost all of them, honestly, this year. I was with the masses. I thought it's a really good class, and I think it's showing that. But I think he's really good. And I think he's going to be really good. Is he CJ Stroud? Is he going to be able to do what CJ Stroud? And by the way, it's red zone with Stroud yesterday. He is unbelievable. CJ Stroud is incredible. Like, it's not a flash in the pan. Some of the throws he's making, but anyway, is he going to put up numbers like Stroud did in his rookie year, or Mahomes did in his first year as a starter? No, I don't think so, but I think he can be the best rookie, and Jaden Daniels has been incredible, and we'll see. We're 6 weeks in, and those two look great, but I think by the end of it, we could see Williams right up there with anybody, and his team is just a little better, I think, than maybe we realized. Speaking of Daniels, loses to the Ravens. Ravens get the win there, and the Lions. Those are the two big, like, monumental wins, Ravens, Lions. And we can file this away because we'll get to Wyatt Thompson here in just a few minutes. But those are the two teams, I think, that establish themselves. I mean, honestly, Tommy, maybe even at the top of their respective leagues. And I say that, and I would still take the Chiefs over the Ravens. They obviously beat the Ravens. But when you factor in health, I think it's close. And I know the Vikings are unbeaten and all those things. When I factor everything in, I'm probably still taking the Lions. We'll see if you agree with that. So file that away. We'll get to that later in the program. Your calls, your comments, all welcome. 869-1240 on the IHOP hotline. We're going to bring in Wyatt Thompson next. The Cats winners in Colorado. And they do it again in a way that I just don't think should surprise us. And it makes me really optimistic for the rest of their way. And what they've been doing and allowing teams to do, it all seems very much exactly what they want to be doing. So we'll get Wyatt Thompson's take on that next. The voice of the Wildcats joins us, Sports Daily. We'll give away some Wichita Thunder hockey tickets before we go today. We'll give away a little HTO before we go today. So stay tuned for your opportunities there. Want to say thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH. When we return, Wyatt Thompson. We'll talk a little Cats winners in Boulder over the high-powered Colorado Buffaloes. That's next.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are glad to be here with you. On your way into work, I want to keep listening to Sports Daily, even after you park the car. With the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com, you can just download the app. Visit Odyssey.com, search for KFH. Download the Odyssey app today to get started. You can even leave us voice messages there on the Odyssey app that feed right there into Max this week. And you can also go back and listen to this interview if you're not able to catch all of it at any point. It gets podcasted out as we bring in Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats, K-State, big winners. It was as exciting as promised, 31-28 over the Buffaloes of Colorado. As much bad fortune as there was in the mountains the last time the Cats were there. A little, you know, good fortune in that they were able to maintain and hold through. And look, Colorado, Wyatt, they were down their top two pass catchers most of that game. And K-State was able to take advantage and get the win. Shedeur Sanders still looked good. But here's this game plan again where they want teams to throw on them and not run on them. And it keeps working.
It does. Good to be on with you guys again. It was a terrific football game and a great win for the Cats. I think they overcame a lot of things. I thought Colorado really battled too. It's very, very, very obvious that they're quite an improving team, I'll say it that way, compared to what they were in week one with North Dakota State and what they were, you know, the last few weeks. It's pretty remarkable what they've done, and they do have a lot of great athletes. It's so impressive watching Shedeur live. He just is such an accurate passer under duress. Yeah, he gets sacked occasionally. Every now and again, he'll throw a bad ball or what have you, but he is such a competitor. Really proud of the guys. You know, I love the defense from the standpoint of the plan going in with a taking Austin Romaine out of the starting lineup, which is hard to do. He's one of the highest rated middle linebackers in the country. And you start six DBs, and I thought that really got K-State off to a decent start in the game, and they just kept battling, and man, it was a war. I'm not going to lie. It was hard, but K-State found a way, and it feels really good. I can promise you that.
Wyatt, let's jump ahead to the go-ahead touchdown, ultimately the winning touchdown for Kansas State in the fourth quarter. Avery Johnson connecting with Jace Brown, a 50-yard TD pass, a go route for Brown against man coverage. As that whole situation was setting up and knowing that the Wildcats needed to get into the end zone to take the lead and ultimately win the game, what did you guys see leading up to that, the play call? I mean, just walk us through that entire sequence to be able to get that go-ahead TD.
Well, I think there were a couple of plays that you saw multiple times in the game that K-State felt like they had a distinct advantage on, and that was the wheel route out of the backfield to DJ Giddens. He dropped one, but also made a great catch and run late in the game when they had to have it after falling behind. And then the other is just the long pass, you know, to Jace. It's really, to me, proof that you can see the growth in Avery. That was a dime on that on the game-winning touchdown pass, man. It was perfectly thrown, and it was decent coverage. It wasn't perfect, but it was really decent coverage. I just felt like, I don't know how to explain this. I felt so good for Avery doing that after he had that, you know, deflected interception that turned into a touchdown, and you're up 24-14, and now, you know, 3 minutes to go, you think you're going to lose the game, right? I mean, let's be honest. I'm sure a lot of people thought that. But to find a way to do that and come back and go that far in three plays, that's impressive.
I want to, speaking of Avery, this was going to be, we thought, even in the late window, a high-profile game for him. Yeah. With Colorado, and I think it ended up being that. And I only gauge that anecdotally on the number of people that don't typically watch K-State that were asking me about him doing Prime's dance in the end zone. And and quite frankly, I was like, yep, that's he did. And then, you know, I loved it. I thought it was great, but it did, I think, give a good example of just how many eyeballs were on this game. And that added to the drama. And that stuff matters, I think, for K-State football big picture. To have Avery on the field, yes. But Avery being a superstar is important, I think, in the modern college football era.
Well, I think that's perfectly said. I think you can even say it this way. Tell me if you think this is accurate or not. I think in so many ways, away from his talent, he's a very confident but somewhat soft-spoken guy.
Yeah.
And then there's that side of him, you know, that is doing that. You know, and a lot of people have asked me, you know, about, you know, him riding the bike and taking a selfie right in the middle of it.
I love it.
You know, I don't know necessarily, I'm wondering out loud here, but I'm wondering if the coaches are saying to him at some point, don't do that anymore. The rest of it is fine. I don't know that. But he's got some flair. There's no question about that. And on a night where, you know, we saw a lot of, and let's be honest, Prime out there is like on a scale of 1 to 10 at about 50.
Yeah.
Right. You saw all the NBA people on the sideline there and all of the flash and dash of what they are. And Prime, he's done a great job, man. He's a personality person. And sometimes it's all right to let a little personality show. I think that's what makes sports a little different now than it might have been even as short as, you know, 8-10 years ago, frankly, maybe even 5 years ago.
DJ Giddens, Wyatt, has, again, had another great game on the ground for the Wildcats, and it's kind of like rinse and repeat for DJ Giddens. He's been, I think, a key factor to allow some of that pressure to be taken off of the shoulders of Avery Johnson through the air, just because he's been, I guess, Mr. Reliable on the ground. As I was watching him last night, and you know, he goes for another game of over 100 yards rushing. To me, you know, he strikes me as one of, if not the best running backs in the Big 12 this season. And I always knew that he was a good player, obviously, if, you know, when he had that timeshare, you know, a couple years ago, and then kind of leading his way up to being the lead back Do you feel like you've seen him get to a point to where he's kind of solidified his place among running backs in the conference?
If he hasn't, they're not watching closely enough.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that's averaging over 7 yards a carry. He is as durable as it gets. I think you saw maybe the best play that I've seen to basically prove his athleticism and his ability is the little shake move past Sanders the other night. Shiloh had no chance.
Yeah.
Right?
Took him to the ground,
I think,
right?
You guys know the play I'm talking about. He's just proving over and over and over just how much he can do, the load he takes. He's such an unassuming guy, and yet when he's out there, production-wise, he's as good as most. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I find him such an intriguing personality, to be honest about it, and I think I don't know whether he likes all the interviews and the spotlight or not, but you cannot take away that production-wise, he's one of the best football players in America right now. No doubt in my mind about that.
And I think his success speaks to something else that I'm never smart enough to know a great deal. I can easily see how an offensive line plays when they play poorly. It's a little more difficult to see when they're playing the right way, but for a unit that had as many questions as it did coming in, I have to imagine the coaching staff has been very pleased with the way this offensive line has played this year.
I'm so glad you asked about that, because I think all of those guys, whether it's Dylan Edwards, Avery Johnson, DJ Giddens, will tell you those guys, after frankly a little bit of a slow start, have been great. I'm certainly prejudiced, but I think they're playing as well as any offensive line group in the league at this particular point. And I don't see everybody every week. I understand that, but I do watch a lot of football and I follow this very, very closely. Colorado is a lot better defensively, and their schemes are good. They play so hard. They just really run to the football and all that kind of stuff. And let's be honest, most of the night, K-State was dominant and just blowing them off the ball. I guess what I'm trying to get at is I think everybody knew, Jacob, how much K-State lost on the offensive line. It was a concern, and I get it. It should have been. But as I said from the beginning, they have more experience there than people understand. And once they play a little bit together, I'm anxious to see what happens. And I think it's proven out that way. I'll give you what I believe is the perfect example is Easton Kilty, the left tackle. I'll bet he's playing 30 to 35% better right now than he did in weeks 1 and 2. And this is a guy that started basically for 3 years at North Dakota. He's a really good football player. You know, you got Hadley Panzer, who can play almost everywhere, right? Sam Hecht is one of the best stories that isn't being told because of just where he plays and what have you. He's been really, really good. And then Portier and you know, some of those other kids. I love how can you not love Carver Willis's toughness? You know, I mean, all those guys, they're really well coached for one. They have more experience than I think perception with the perception being out there, and they're a tough group. I'm so proud of what they've done. I'm just being blunt about that. They've been terrific.
Wyatt, when we're talking about the defense for Kansas State, you know, the pass rush being able to, you know, make Shedeur Sanders at least a little bit uncomfortable in the pocket, I think was clearly the highlight defensively for the Wildcats. And it's, you know, Shedeur Sanders, he's one of, if not the best quarterbacks in the entire country. He finished 34-40, 388 yards, 3 touchdowns. When he had time in the pocket, he carved up the secondary for Kansas State. Is that, in your mind, more indicative of just the talent of Shedeur Sanders? Or is there something with the secondary with Kansas State that you think moving forward needs to be shored up?
Well, that is a really good question. And I'll just be as blunt as I can be on this. I have to start with Shedeur Sanders' ability. He made a 55-60-yard throw the other night. I've been doing Division I football games since 1989. It was as good a throw as I have ever seen. Let me say that again, as I have ever seen. It was remarkable. He has a great ability. And I thought Stan talked about this on our broadcast and it played out perfectly. He said, it's hard. You can get to him with a guy, but you can't get him to the ground with one. It takes two. And I think that was proven out. He just extends plays. He does a lot. I'm saying all of that to say, as much as he did in a one-dimensional offense, I still think K-State defended him pretty well and did an okay job and put themselves in a position to win the game. And at the end of the day, that's what really truly matters. I was so proud of the defensive effort and with that secondary from the standpoint of playing, you know, six guys most of the night, a lot of guys coming in and out of the lineup. I mean, Justice James started in the game. Kobe McAllister started in the game.
They're banged up.
Two guys were really, honestly, if I'm being honest, were playing out of position from where they normally play. I thought the coaching there was great, and I'm just going to be blunt about that. I really, truly did. I thought it was awesome.
It's both teams were dropping like flies in that game. I don't know what Absolutely. Was going on, but yeah. K-State secondary was depleted. Avery Johnson left the game, and I bring that up because now this very dangerous portion of the schedule really takes center stage. You had as late as you can play a college football game, and now you've got to go back the other direction all the way across the country. West Virginia's better than people thought before the year. You've got all these injuries now to deal with as well, and West Virginia's pissed that they just lost. So this seems like a very trappy week that K-State has got to be laser focused on, and then Kansas looms after that. This is tricky.
You said everything there in my mind, because again, this was I just told a coworker that my front wheels of my vehicle was at the entrance of the airport, leaving the airport Sunday morning at 5:03.
Man,
that gives you a pretty good idea of what they're dealing with. And we talked about this a few weeks ago after Provo, right? And they were mad that they lost there. They were upset the way they played. And I think they made a statement against Oklahoma State. And I think they're continuing to get better. And I think they're well coached and all of those things. But your point is so good, because you have a short week and then another long trip. Now, this isn't a 9:30 game. It's 6:30. And that makes a difference, of course. But you also said that West Virginia is better than people think. And I believe that is so. That Iowa State game at their place was a lot closer than the 28-16 might lead you to believe. I think Garrett Green is playing really, really good football right now. He's a run throw threat. They've got pieces. They've got two pros on their offensive line. They're usually pretty good defensively. And then, as you say, you come back, and it's going to be about a month before K-State has played a home game, and then it's against Kansas. And despite their troubles, you know what that game is going to be like. Emotions crazy high. So, yeah, this winning in Boulder was euphoric for me. I'm not going to kid you. I thought it was a great win for the program and Coach Klieman and all those guys. But now, with what lies in front, it's like people are going to say, hey, take care of business. You're going to end up in Arlington. That's true. But you still got to go do it. And those games will be hard. We all know it. 100%, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
I see a reaction there. It's true.
It is. And with this conference, Wyatt, that's a good lead into what I was going to ask you about the Big 12. You know, through the first three conference games, the three undefeated teams in conference were picked 6th, 9th, and 13th, respectively, in the preseason rankings in the Big 12. I don't think anybody saw that particularly coming, but I do know that, I mean, going into the season, I think the thought was maybe outside of Utah, it was going to be a big jumbled up mess. It's a big jumbled up mess, but the teams that are at the very top that have kind of risen above and are undefeated through three games are three teams that I don't think anybody saw coming.
Oh, I love the subject too, because, you know, take Utah as an example. They're really a good football team.
Yeah.
I'm still convinced of that, but their lead guy has not done much. That has a monumental effect on their team. He's had a bad hand. If you watch the game the other night, he got an ankle rolled in the first quarter of the game and gutted it out, but didn't play very well. You know, on the other side, you know, I think we all thought BYU was going to be better, but who saw Retzlaff making that kind of leap? Tech has a lot of football players back, and for whatever reason, nobody really noticed that. Baron Morton's been the quarterback there a long time, and I think they're well coached, and they always have good athletes. I guess I'll make this point too, to say, you know, those coaches made these picks. They know what they're talking about for the most part, right? But like last year, if you remember Big 12 Media Days last year, guys, and I know you do, I'm going to say something here on the air that I usually don't say, but Neil Brown got up there and he was pissed that they were picked last in the league.
Yeah.
And they were so motivated by that, they went out and won 9 games. This league is hard. That's the point.
And, it is. And
it's
not
always get it right.
Is it lining up for – that's what I can't decide. I don't think that it is. BYU, better hope Utah's healthy when they play BYU, because their schedule now that we know the Big 12 looks favorable and they have the game in hand.
Yeah.
So if that leaves one spot, K-State does not play Texas Tech. They do get to play Arizona State. They do get to play Iowa State. But like, and they play West Virginia. So there's 3 of the teams that they need to be better than they'll play, but they don't play Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And so now you've got, you know, you got to hope Tech loses a game, and then you got to basically win them all. I guess the point of all of this for me is in Tech's schedule, they have to go to Iowa State, and we'll see what Oklahoma State is, but that's their tough one. I don't think K-State can lose again. I don't. I don't know that they're going to have enough good fortune falling their way to have 2 losses and get to Arlington. I think they got to win out in the conference, Wyatt, to get there, I think, at this point.
Well, you said a lot there with Tech, and I that's one thing that you notice, or at least I pay attention to. I loved the Big 12 when you played everybody in football and it was the round robin in basketball, and I'm going to miss that. I've said that all along. And this is part of the reason why. I think that's what made the league so good and so fan-friendly. Because you knew you were going to play Tech, right? As an example, or you were going to play that one team that was, you know, and K-State did fumble it up at BYU. So they got to deal with that, right? So it kind of lowers, you know, what you can get away with. And you're probably right. Getting there with 2 doesn't look necessarily like a great opportunity right now. And it's probably correct. We'll see how it plays out. But I'm just going to say this too, the tiebreaker situation last year was a mess. I hope it's better now. I need to start to look at that a little bit too. We got a long way to go though.
Well, the problem with it is, I think, like, you can handle business against Iowa State and you can take care of West Virginia and Arizona State. You've already taken care of Colorado. So those are all good things. And you get Cincinnati, who also only has a loss, I suppose we should mention. But you're not going to have tiebreaker against BYU. And if they are going to lose a game the rest of the way, you're either tie-breaking with whatever the rules are, or you'll lose the tiebreaker to that team. That's like, so which law? I mean, I suppose if they, you know, if they lost to Kansas at this point, it would be possible. But otherwise, you're going to be behind a tiebreaker head-to-head to somebody if they right. lose another game. So I don't know. I think they got to win out. And I think, you know, they can. Like, for sure they can. I think they can. But yeah. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, it will be tough. And, you know, when you think about all of the tiebreaker stuff and all of that and how much time is left, for me, you put it into perspective when you started mentioning all the teams that K-State plays. They play West Virginia, Morgantown. I don't know that most people that follow this league have paid that much attention to Cincinnati, and I'm telling you, they are pretty darn good. They finally have a quarterback who can throw the ball, and he's tough. He can run. I think they're going to be a lot harder team to beat than most people perceive. I don't think playing at Houston is going to be a day at the beach either, right? I mean, we'll see. They've been up and down. I will admit that. But when they've been up, they've been pretty good. Playing at Iowa State will be as hard as it gets. You know, I think playing here for teams is as hard as it gets. So I don't know, but I'm not a betting man. I don't know that a team that will play in the championship game in Arlington will have 2, but it doesn't look great as we sat here and talked today. No doubt about that.
If you were a betting man, you really hope you got the Cats at 3 and not 3.5 this past weekend, which was a fun experience to be a part of as betting men as we are. Wyatt, we appreciate it. Enjoy the brief rest that you get before another long trip out the other direction Let's kick off time for that one. I haven't even looked yet. It's a
6:30.
Oh, that helps.
Game. Yeah,
that's actually pretty helpful. What do you guys have coming up for us this week?
Well, we'll go on the air 2 hours prior at 4:30. Not totally sure yet on the players. We actually will make those requests today and try to get those guys interviewed later in the week. But one guy, I won't promise this, but one guy I really would love to talk to that we haven't really mentioned that I thought played spectacular football Saturday night was Brendan Mott.
He was everywhere.
That guy is unbelievable right now, the way
he was
playing.
Everywhere.
Yeah, he's just you couldn't have a better sixth year than he's having from my perspective, and I love his motor. I'd like to be able to visit with him. I don't know that it'll work out exactly time wise, but we'll have our typical coverage. And by the way, there was a Fox/FS1 for all those television watchers. It will be on Big Fox. I can tell you that was decided yesterday.
Another big opportunity, another big spotlight opportunity for Avery, who's thriving in it. We're looking forward to it. Wyatt, we appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much. Had a fun doing it.
There goes Wyatt Thompson, voice of the K-State Wildcats. If you missed any of it, we covered a lot of ground there with Wyatt. You can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. Mott, man, I'm glad he brought him up, Tommy. You want to talk about a guy like Shadur Sanders who keeps plays alive too long's nightmare? It's a guy like Mott whose motor never stops. And some like he was – I'll be honest, I was fighting and I dozed off one time, but it felt like every time I looked up, it was Mott in on a play. That was a fun game. I don't think they can lose again, Tommy. I think they got to stay with one loss.
Yeah, I think they have to stay with one loss too, although I think the three teams that are above them that are undefeated in the conference, BYU, they might be talented enough to run the table. Maybe.
Their schedule's not hard. It's not that BYU used to lose twice.
Right. Well, yeah, because they've already beaten Kansas State.
Yeah.
The other two teams, I don't think they'll run the table. I'm not sure that I believe that necessarily. Iowa State, I think, is kind of solidifying itself as, one of the top teams, could potentially play for a Big 12 championship, and they could easily be in the 12-team playoff as well. Things are falling in a weird way where, again, like I mentioned it to Wyatt, you've got 6th, 9th, and 13th preseason Big 12 rankings for the three teams that are currently undefeated in the conference. It's a jumbled mess. I think we both thought that it was going to be a jumbled mess, but I certainly didn't see these three teams being the teams at the very top.
Right, and it throws off what we were trying to evaluate on the schedule. Just as and BYU would have to lose twice. I think that makes it. But here's what Tech has left, just real quick. They host Baylor. They're on the road at TCU. They'll be favorites in both of those games. They do have to go to Iowa State. They won't be a favorite there. They host Colorado. We'll see what Oklahoma State does. They have to go there, and then they host West Virginia. They have a favorable schedule for the most part. And they may lose at Iowa State. That's fine. But then where does a tiebreaker come in? Because that would be their first conference loss. So that's where it gets – because you don't get to play them, and that's where it gets tricky. All right. Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Tommy, you got out for the – you texted me yesterday. First time in a month you've played golf.
I did.
Crestview's looking great right now as they're getting things ready to roll. How'd you shoot?
Not very well. I mean, when you don't play for a month, you're a little bit rusty. It was kind of windy yesterday, too, so I'll use that as an excuse. But beautiful day. I played yesterday when it was significantly cooler compared to on Saturday when it was really hot. So I did luck out in that regard, but it was good to get out there. As you mentioned, the course is looking really, really good this time of year. I love it. Before everything goes dormant for the winter time, it's my favorite time to play golf in the fall. So things are good. It was fun to get out there, even though I didn't play very well.
In the 40s this morning. So get out there and bundle up. We appreciate Crestview's support of the program. It's funny you say it was good to get out there, even though I didn't play well. I feel a little that feels like what the Cowboys might be saying today. I just saw during the break. I reposted or tweeted it or whatever. The AT&T Stadium sent out a celebratory image of the stadium full and said 93,000 fans. And I don't know. I don't think this was photoshopped. I think it was their tweet. The score is blurred out on the scoreboard.
Yeah,
on that post. Yeah. They blurred the
score. Probably deliberately, I would guess.
Well, yeah, of course it was.
That was rough.
That's a perfect good to get out there, even though we didn't play well moment. God bless. I told you they're not for real. They have no shot this year. Told you that before the year. Not surprised at all. Like, just none of what's happening with the Dallas Cowboys should surprise a soul. They did nothing in the offseason. They got worse in the offseason. They kept everything the same and lost talent. And like, what did anybody expect?
I just can't wrap my head around the fact that they kicked off the season really well. Like, they went to Cleveland. And I know the Browns are the Browns, right? But they went to Cleveland. They put up a bunch of points, though, against Cleveland. And then all of a sudden, it's like nothing. They can't do anything.
They've been okay on the road, which is, again, is really strange. But you got to look at who they're playing. Pittsburgh, that game was terrible. It was so ugly. And the other one is the Giants. Like, who cares? You lost by a boatload to the Saints. You were getting your tail kicked by Baltimore. I know they made it close late. And you get your tail kicked by Detroit. What do you think is going to happen after the bye when they go to San Francisco and Atlanta and Philadelphia and Houston and Washington? That's their next five games after this bye week.
Hold on to your butts, Dallas fans. It's going to be rough.
Whatever. I've never been so sad to be so right. They suck. 869-1240. Let's come back. We'll go back to the NFL a little bit. We just gave a real brief overview. Talk to Tommy. I want to pick his brain, see if he feels the same way about the Ravens and the Lions. And it's a very much what have you done for me lately league. And it feels like those might be the two best teams in each conference at the moment. We'll talk about that. Is that unfair to the Chiefs or Vikings? We'll give it to you next on Sports Daily.